Ed and Rizan Ferrelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Now, at this point, we know almost all the quarterfinalists in the World Cup in Qatar. And for the football fans out there, from tomorrow, the unthinkable happens. 2 days without any matches whatsoever. So Marie Crow from Game On joins me now to have a look at the tournament so far, a look at what lies ahead, and ask whether the sports washing has already worked. Marie, first of all, Brazil last night, they went full Brazil. The dancing was actually phenomenal.
This is actually hilarious.
I just loved it so much. Africa,
because it's really dividing people. So there's a lot of pundits out there that think they were being really disrespectful, that they should have saved all their dancing to the end, that like scoring a third goal didn't really warrant a full-on samba.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So Roy Keane obviously being one of them, but yes. I mean, he does get outraged about everything. But it's so funny. Like, Brazil are playing this amazing brand of football.
Yeah.
And they're bringing so much colour, personality. Like, it's that type of celebrationary kind of football that they play. Yet people are now saying that they've fallen out of love with them because they dance too much.
See, I suppose, like, for diehard football fans, I understand why it's, like, you know, sacrilege or whatever to celebrate before you've, you know, the match is over and all that kind of stuff. But, like, for a casual observer like me, mm-hmm. who the World Cup means, like, Brazil and Argentina mm-hmm. and all those amazing, like, Latin American countries and all that kind of thing, who do that and who bring colour and who bring fun and who bring samba and all that kind of stuff. Like, I loved it.
Yeah, and I'm with you on this one, yeah. Afrik, because we tune into the World Cup to see all the different personalities from the different
That's
countries.
It.
Like, they're going to play well. You're going to get good football anyway. So to get that little bit of added extra. Now, I can see why it was interpreted as being a bit disrespectful, a little bit arrogant. But, I mean, they were playing brilliant. They were really enjoying it. They've been enjoying it since the start.
Yeah.
They have a good team. You can see that there's unity there with them and with their manager and the players and... you know, there's a lot going on with Pele as well, and they're celebrating him, and they had the flag, and I enjoyed it. I just think that people can get a bit carried away with
things like that.
Let them be themselves, and that's what they're being.
Well, England are already shown montages of, you know, the glory days of 1966, so like, it's a premature celebration. I think we're probably...
Yeah, and even like, you know, you're looking for tenuous links, or they're looking for tenuous links. There was an article in the paper, in the Mail on Sunday, and they were featuring Jude Bellingham, who's this young teenager who's been England's best player, and he's 19. His dad's police badge is 1966. They did a whole feature on how it's fate, basically, because his dad's police badge
it's in his blood. He was born to do this. Oh, that's so funny. It's so classic. But Killian actually on the team sent me the video of Cheech, is that mm-hmm. right, doing the pigeon dance as well last night. It was I can see why it would have annoyed pundits and stuff, and it really did annoy all the pundits on RTE and on
around the world Brazil.
Exactly. Yeah.
And like, I kind of like, it was a bit dad dancey anyway, so like yeah, to start with that. But I liked that they all got involved, and
yeah.
You know, like, this is a big deal. You get to play in a World Cup a couple of times in your life if you're lucky.
Yeah,
and it looked like they were just playing with their friends and enjoying themselves and having the crack.
Exactly. So. Yeah. If you can't have a bit of crack, like, what's the point?
Forget about it.
You know what I mean? So today then, Morocco play Spain, and later on Portugal take on Switzerland. So do you think there are any shocks left in this round?
It's really hard to say. Morocco have been a lot better than people expected.
Okay.
So have Spain, though. Spain have, going into this, there was a lot of questions about whether they had the players, whether they had the quality, whether they had the leaders, what they were going to do with the number 9 position, but they've answered all of those questions. So I think Spain are going to be okay.
Okay.
Portugal is a bit tricky because of Ronaldo, and the same conversations are happening around whether or not he should be starting for Portugal and what an influence he has on the team. And he was taken off the last day and he got really angry and did the usual give an out on the way off, and the Portuguese manager was asked about it, and for once, which people don't generally say, he said he was really angry about it and he wasn't happy. So the questions, a bit like the Manchester United scenario, are whether Ronaldo is going to end up starting for Portugal and what that means for the team around him. They're taking on...
That's interesting. Is it kind of like he's just... Does he feel he's bigger than
than everyone in the
whole
world.
Than everyone in the whole world, yeah. Basically.
That would be the correct assumption.
The correct assumption, good.
Yeah, and look, he's been such a mainstay for so long and been doing it for Portugal for so long. I can see why he would think that. And even just look, his status in world football, he's right up there with Messi, has been the best player in the modern game for such a long time. But at the same time, his team are going to want to go out and win. Look, he's been all right in this World Cup. I mean, for a 36-year-old lad who hasn't been playing a lot of club football, he's pretty impressive that he's still able to keep going. Look, who knows? There's been such mad shocks that it could happen. But both Spain and Portugal are kind of growing into the tournament. Like, they're improving all the time. So we'll see.
Okay.
Hard to predict.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly. And it was like you say, there were so many shocks kind of, you know, it does feel like, though, that the big teams
are kind of down to business. It does feel a bit like that.
Yeah. Okay. So what games are you looking forward to then the most?
England and France, Africa.
I can't watch that. I have this thing where I think if I watch a match, they'll lose or they'll win.
So you think if you're watching England playing, they're going to win?
Yeah, I do.
Well, there's a good chance they are going to win, but...
Well, then I can't watch it.
That's what happens in football matches, Afric. Sometimes the team that you don't want to win goes out and wins. But you
Thank
have
you.
To persevere, stay with it, because you might get the result that you want.
Yeah.
It's the beauty of it.
What do you reckon with that?
England are doing well.
They're confident, aren't they?
Yeah, they're confident. They're scoring goals. They've got a good balance in their team. Mm. They seem to be getting on. They're dealing with the pressure really well. Gareth Southgate, same thing. He's been a little bit more adventurous with his team selection. He does have options in terms of what he can do with his back three, back five, back four. He's been playing around a little bit. Up the other end, he's got players who can score goals. Jude Bellingham, who I said has been brilliant in the middle. Mm-hmm. The problem he has, though, is that England are going to be facing Kylian Mbappe and they will have never faced anybody like him in the form that he's in. So he's just playing.
He is just amazing, isn't he?
Yeah, he's playing really well. And he hasn't been in that good form in a long time. And he's really focused and determined to go and win a World Cup for France. In every interview that he's done in the last few weeks, he's saying all he cares about, it's like everything that he's done in the last year has been working towards trying to win the World Cup for France, and that's really reflective in his performances and how he's peaked at this time.
He also seems to be enjoying it, doesn't he? Like, he's just having the time of his life, it looks like.
It's just all working out for him.
Yeah.
And he's really fast.
Fingers crossed.
He's the fastest. Well, I'd say he's the fastest player there anyway. So, like, even just trying to manage him, like, what are they going to do? Are they going to put two players on him? Are they going to rotate?
I was going to ask you, who would be his opposite number in England?
The expectation is that Kyle Walker is going to go and pick him up. But the problem with Kyle Walker is he was injured heading into this. He hasn't got a lot of minutes under his belt coming into a World Cup. And you need match sharpness when you're up against Kylian Mbappe, but Kyle Walker does have the speed.
Yeah,
he'd probably be the best option in that from that point of view. But
it's going to be a good one, though.
It's going to be class.
Yeah,
and look, there's so much history there.
Yeah,
it's like they're really well matched teams. Like, you're at a quarter final of a World Cup. It's I mean, you couldn't ask for any more.
No,
really.
It's huge.
Just a little bit of atmosphere maybe that's been lacking at the France games for the last while. That's about it.
Talking of atmosphere, actually, and we talked about, like, the highs and stuff there, and every, you know, pitch wise, and that was what they were all saying at the beginning, let's talk about the football. Mm-hmm. But there are empty seats around. You see them when, you know, on the telly. Have they priced people out of it? Like, is that what's happening, or what's the story
there? I think people haven't travelled in the numbers that they've travelled before, because, like, you can imagine, Africa, if it's something that you really want to go to, or something you've been looking forward to for your whole life, and then it's in a place like Qatar where you can't drink, you can't have that party atmosphere. Mm-hmm. It's really expensive. There's all the human rights issues around it.
Yeah.
There's the issues about the LGBTQ community as well. Not as many people are traveling from Europe, I think. So a lot of those games, they don't have the fans at it. And I think as well, it just hasn't been as attractive to the maybe the neutral too to go there. So
yeah,
it just doesn't have the numbers, the demand. Like some of the fans have been brilliant, and you know, the likes of the Argentinas and the Brazils have been amazing.
They make a lot of noise.
They make a lot of noise and they bring the colour, but it's definitely doesn't have the same effect that a normal World Cup per se would
course.
Have,
or during
normal
the summer
major championships. It's just all a little bit different. And the casual fan as well, for the last few weeks, was probably going to like three games a day, two games a day. So they would have maybe bought up a lot more tickets and maybe just opted not to use them, not to go to the three or four games that they had planned to go. So I'd say that probably came into it as well.
So you're a journalist, but you're also a massive fan of sport. So how does it sit with you? Like the migrant deaths, say, in Qatar, like shameful numbers of people who died building the stadiums and stuff. Also the LGBTQ question, which has just kind of been left to talked about it a lot at the beginning, but now, you know, the tournament has moved on from that, it feels like. How does that sit with you, that, like, as a fan and as a journalist as well?
It's really difficult. It's difficult for a number of reasons, because first of all, I love the football and my family love the football, and you know, my kids don't really understand the issues that are over there, and it's nice to sit down with your kids and watch a game, but at the same time there's always a feeling of guilt because you know what's the cost has been to make that World Cup
for
happen.
Sure,
But I think just from a journalist point of view, the fact that we keep talking about it, like that does, I think, look, it helps raise awareness a little bit anyway. Like you can only do so much. I mean, I can't sit here and be a hypocrite and say I don't talk about football because I absolutely do, or I don't watch football.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
because
yeah.
I do. But, you know, I do feel that because of everything that has been talked about, that there has been a bit of a spotlight shone on the issues
for
over
sure,
there
yeah.
and the conversations have been started. I don't know, you know, we look at what could happen in the future and the fact that it could go, the 2030 World Cup could go to Saudi Arabia, and there's a really good chance that it actually might happen. You would feel as well that it's probably been a little bit futile, that it's...
It does feel like that. It's just kind of like, I felt that at the beginning, like there was all this, first of all, they had 10 years to, do you know what I mean, since it was awarded, to kind of to talk about Qatar and to talk about, you know, the human rights abuses and the standing of the LGBTQ community over there and women over there and all that kind of stuff as well. But it's really interesting. And Gary Lineker did his big thing at the start. They didn't show the opening ceremony and he did his, you know, big speech, and there was a lot of talk about, a lot of talk about it at the beginning. But it does seem to have, like, FIFA said we want to concentrate on the football, and that is kind of what has happened.
Yeah, and to be fair to the journalists that are over there as well, a few of them have come out over the last week or so and said, what would we know? Like, what are we experiencing? We're going from match to match. We're hopping on the tube.
Yeah.
We're going here and there. We've no idea what it's like to be gay there. We've no idea what
for
it's
sure,
like to
yeah.
be a migrant worker there. We've no idea what it's like to be sitting, driving a taxi for 16 hours a day and not have any breaks. Like, we don't know.
No.
So we're not in a position to talk about any of what it's like to be living there, because we've no experience. We're just experiencing the football. So even for the likes of the Gary Nevilles, who's coming out and said, oh, it's great, you know, we're having, you know, it's a great place. And you know, there's, you know, culturally it's lovely and it's beautiful. Like he doesn't actually know what it's like to be a person.
No,
living
of
there.
Course,
he's
a huge amount
there.
Of privilege. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah,
just
yeah.
there on a working trip, which is, and he's only seeing the very best bits of it. No one's actually seeing the reality of it. So
no.
I don't think they're in a position to be talking about it anymore. Anyway.
One thing that I wonder now, and when we see the empty seats and you see the you know, like you say, neutrals not travelling and stuff like that. Now, a lot of countries definitely travelling and showing up for, you know, their teams and that kind of thing. Do you think FIFA and Qatar will see this as a success, as a successful World Cup?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think they will.
Yeah.
They're showcasing the best of their country without anybody really getting to scratch under the surface and to see the reality. They've been covering up everything that's happening in the run-up to it. They've been trying to gloss over the human rights issues. They've been pretending that they're being a little bit lenient to the LGBTQ communities, but that's not that's not the reality. So they're going to be happy that they have shown that they can host a World Cup, and they're going to put the narrative out that they presented their country to the worldwide audience, and they have done that.
They
and
have, yeah.
people are talking about the football, but I think that that's exactly what sports washing is, Africa, and they've been really successful with it. And
so it has been successful.
I think it. Yeah. I think they'll have achieved what they wanted to achieve out of it. I don't think that. Like, nobody's boycotted the World Cup.
Uh-huh.
Like, none of the countries have, none of the players
advertisers.
Have. Yeah. And, like, the thing that really hit home to me that what they've been doing is a success is Arsene Wenger, who's the former Arsenal manager, mm-hmm. who football fans will know. He works for FIFA. He's part of their technical team.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a press conference yesterday, and it was a technical briefing. And at some stage during that technical briefing, he said that the teams who have been focusing on the football and the competition have done better than the ones that have made the political protests.
Right.
And like, essentially that's not true, but
he was able
to put that message out there and say that. And while people who might think a little bit deeper about the football tournament or what's happening might, you know, will understand that that's not true, there'll be plenty of people that'll be like, oh yeah, he's right. Like, why do they bother?
Yeah.
You know, and they won't care.
Can I ask you finally, this World Cup is in winter. We all thought this was going to be a one-off. You talked about Saudi Arabia possibility for 2030. You said it's a real possibility. So will we see more World Cups in winter? Also, I'm not even going to get into Saudi Arabia and their human rights record.
Where do we start with that?
Where do you even start? But do you reckon this is something that will happen now from time to time?
With FIFA, I wouldn't rule anything out.
Yeah.
Like, I really wouldn't. And the conversations have started about Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
They've started about Ronaldo possibly going to a club there for, I think, 200+ million.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is possible. Now look, the Winter World Cup, I haven't found it that bad because, you know,
no, it's fine.
Yeah,
and
it's
actually
grand.
It's also kind of like when it gets dark at 4 o'clock and it's something like guaranteed to watch kind of later in the day. It's
but
kind
it
of
is
all right.
Tricky for the players because we've seen so many of them being ruled out because of injury because
that's
it's
true.
Mid-season and
yeah,
you know, there's
course,
a player welfare issue there as well. But they've pulled it off now and in their eyes, in FIFA's eyes, it'll be a success. And Infantino, we did that media briefing beforehand just as the World Cup was starting and you could see he didn't really care about
anything. He didn't care.
No. He hasn't cared for the last number of years. He's not going to start caring about all of the issues that are there at the moment. So look, who knows?
So it's possible.
Yeah. And then, you know, they have those stadiums, Africa, that they've put up and they just take them down. They move them to the next place. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
That could be the new thing now.
Finally, who would you like to see win it?
Brazil, Africa.
Okay, amazing. Who do you think is going to win it?
I think just watching Brazil so far and seeing the way they're enjoying themselves, they're having fun, they're playing well. And also, like, there was no questions about them from an attacking point of view. Defensively, maybe the solidity of them did come under the spotlight a little bit, but they seem to be strong all round.
Amazing. Marie Crowe, thanks a million for coming in to chat to me today, talk about the World Cup as we head towards the quarterfinals. Game On is on 2FM weeknights from 6 p.m.
Jennifer Zaffarelli. Weekday morning from 9 on 2FM.